It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Alex Lindsay's finally here to tell us what he thinks of the new Mac Pro. Serenity Caldwell of Macworld Magazine joins us. It's a slow news week, but we managed to make it interesting, including pictures of where you're watching from. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
It's time for Mac Break Weekly, episode 357, recorded July 2nd, 2013, where the bezel meets the bucket. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code MacBreak. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code MacBreak7. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers all of your Apple and Macintosh needs. And we welcome from Hotel Rwanda, Alex Lindsay, calling us. What time is it in Rwanda?
Oh, it's actually not that bad. It's 8:20 in Rwanda. So it's
this shows you how little I understand the time zones. Morning or evening?
Evening. It's evening. I'll tell you. Yeah, it's dark outside here. I'll show you the this is we're at my school.
What do you teach in your school?
Yeah, I just finished class.
What do you teach?
I was teaching visual effects. That's what we teach. Media. Wow. We have media and production. Here, we'll see if we can actually pull this off. So we have actually one of the top five locations of bandwidth in the country.
Well, it's working well. I got to say, much better than most people in the States. That's fabulous.
Yeah.
Is that the prison cell over there on your left?
It's not the prisons, but okay. In Africa, it's pretty common here. Hold on. Let's see.
Bars in the window. Oh, we're outside now. I get it. Okay.
Yeah, we're out. So this is the, hold on. Let's see if we can.
Look at, there's the classroom.
They're watching.
Hey, everybody. That's cool.
Yeah, so that's our pretty nifty little classroom. And
stand up and be seen there. Yeah, that's
everyone,
good.
Stand up and say.
Everybody stand up. Yay. No invisible people.
Wait, hold on. We'll bring up Jerome is my boss.
He's wearing the tie. Jerome, I could tell. I knew that. He's wearing a tie.
Yeah, exactly. So I answer to Jerome.
Yes. Hey,
so
Jerome.
Anyway, he's here auditing, just seeing how we're doing. So it's funny. I just thought I'd show you that for a minute.
Hey, everybody. That's great.
So even though I look like the principal's office is not nearly as cool as the classroom. So, but the classroom's pretty cool. It's all iPads and big IMAX and. So,
Alex,
and a really fast connection.
You can be honest with me. Are you guys working on episode 7 over there?
No comment.
No comment.
Hey, that's the idea, I think, is to create a workforce, an international workforce that can do that kind of stuff.
A lot of it is, we're using visual effects, but a lot of it is media development in general. I mean, one of the things we're really looking at is e-learning and other media effects. Almost all of those students will end up working here for local clients because, Rwanda now is the ninth fastest growing economy in the world. And so it's growing like a weed. And so you need everything, including media. And there's not a lot of media producers. So while we're teaching visual effects, they're also right now they're learning video production and animation and so on and so forth. But a lot of it's going to be really driven around doing stuff for e-learning, which is needed pretty badly here. So we're pretty excited. We were in South Africa over the weekend, and so I figured, I was in the continent, so I figured I'd stop by my school and see how things were going.
That's wonderful. Welcome. Great to have you. Also with us, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com in beautiful, sunny Montreal.
Beautiful, rainy Montreal. Since the last time I have spoken to you, it has not stopped raining. It has been a constant stream of melted snow.
Oh, that's what they call it in Canada, melted snow.
Absolutely.
Nice to see you again, Renee. Thank you for joining us.
It was Canada Day yesterday, Leo. They didn't even shine for that. Oh, it was
Meanwhile, we're having a heat wave. It's the hottest day of the year in Petaluma. Over, I think it's going to go over 100.
Wow.
For a while, I think Weather Underground was predicting 117 degrees for Petaluma today, which is, you know, for Petaluma, that means
you know, I'm in Central Africa, and yeah. It's about 65 degrees here, just in case you're wondering.
That's so weird.
We swapped weather.
So weird. Also,
he's fumbling for the shirt already.
Also here, Andy Anatko with his iPods and accessories.
There you go. All completely legal, as I'm sure you will understand. Because if you're on 42nd Street and 7th Avenue in New York City, you can expect nothing but top quality, current, and not at all copyright rule.
$39. That looks like a U2 iPod there. That's good.
I had to take that picture because like I love the, I don't know if it's there on the screen, but it's like you see big word iPod and then underneath that tiny lettering, like.
What? Really?
Yeah, it's like they're very, very clear. Like, and you look at it and it's almost
it says
perfect.
iPod type, yeah.
iPod like, iPod type, iPad ish. Yeah.
I'm iPad ish. Wow.
And so if you're doing like a movie that's set in 2007 and you need to get your hands on a 2G iPhone, they got them. They can help you out there. It's something that's made like in the Obama administration that they will have trouble furnishing. But it's like, oh, isn't that interesting that you're selling those? Okay.
I have a sign over the front door that says, we've got Edge.
Yes.
also with us, Renee. I said Renee. I'm confused because they've flip-flopped your positions. And also, I'm a little flustered because there's a beautiful woman over all the way on the left here. We don't usually even have a monitor over there. Serenity Caldwell, who has the coolest name of all time.
Well, thank you. It is a very unique name that my parents have blessed me with, and so, I have.
You weren't named after the starship Serenity.
Sadly, I am a little bit too old for that, despite my appearance. Some people think I'm 12.
Yeah. Associate editor of Macworld, she is a wearer of many hats, but not one hat today. I don't, unless that hair is a hat.
No, there's no hat. I was wearing a Team Canada hat all weekend, though, because I play roller derby, and there was a Team USA versus Team Canada matchup. So
did you trade T-shirts at the end?
We did. Oh, we traded T-shirts and flags. And
it was Canada Day was yesterday, right?
It was.
Are you Canadian, Serenity?
I am half Canadian.
Oh.
My mother was Canadian, so I have dual citizenship.
The Serenity half is Canadian.
Yes. The Caldwell is very Scottish, but also California.
Oh, look, I like it. I like it. That's great. Well, we got two Canadians, a Bostonian, a Rwandan, and me. And this is our 4th of July week, we're going to start a new tradition. I like this tradition. Kicked off by Sean Montgomery. We did this last year. Where are you listening to Mac Break Weekly if you're listening live? Sean is apparently listening at the beach. Either that or he has a beautiful blue screen, green screen. So tweet us. Where are you listening or watching Mac Break Weekly today? And you could just use the hashtag Mac Break, and I'll find him. We'll have some fun showing where everybody's listening today. So everybody has wanted for the last 3 weeks since Apple announced the new Mac Pro to say, everybody keeps saying, what does Alex Lindsay think? You are apparently, Alex, you are like the platonic ideal of a Mac Pro user.
Yes. So I'm conflicted. So that's what I'll say initially. So I obviously the performance, you know, of the new Mac Pro as it's at least as it's listed looks pretty outstanding. You know, a lot of connectivity. There's a lot of speed. One of the problems that I have is I really wish that they had put an NVIDIA graphics driver in there as opposed to ATI. We develop a lot of GPU heavy, or we have developed a lot of GPU heavy stuff, and it's we find that the NVIDIA card, the ATI card, is better for games, and the NVIDIA card is better for Pro. That's been
and
kind
it's,
of our
it's,
experience.
It's soldered in there. You're not going to be able to just
swap
it out.
Yeah, I know. And,
you know, you say interesting thing, because Apple's pushing this OpenCL. And, of course, that's why the ATI card is in there. And there is some speculation that because it's a single core unit, apparently it's going to be only single core, 12 cores total, but only single chip, I should say, that they're hoping that pros will push the GPU performance with OpenCL. Isn't that doable?
Well, It is. I mean, most pro applications barely touch the GPU, and the GPU is really where a lot of the power is in most of these computer systems these days. I mean, so Conduit, one of the programs that we worked with folks on building, it's all GPU based, and so is DBMAT. And so these are heavy GPU operations, and we were able to do incredible things, you know, basically comping 3D, two streams of 3D HD together in real time, you know, on the current Macs. And so and that's all because we were using the GPU. CPU can get to 1/10 of that speed. Right. So even now, the GPUs are really the place to go for a lot of that processing. The CPUs can be a little bit more stable at times for certain operations than the GPU. So it's not that the GPU is the be-all, end-all, but definitely for a lot of graphics, heavy graphics performance, you would hope that people will continue to develop down that, down that path.
But would you prefer NVIDIA's CUDA to ATI's OpenCL? Yeah.
Yes. It's two very different thought processes related to how to process the GPU or how to process the operations. And ATI tends to break it up into a lot of smaller pieces than the way NVIDIA handles it. And I have to admit, my view, the average user probably won't see it. My view is from the developer perspective.
Yeah, but this is not an average user machine by any means, is
right,
it?
Right. Well, and so it's not an average user, but I mean, what I mean by that is the user probably won't feel the pain of an ATI GPU as much as the developer will.
You're writing CUDA or CUDA code.
Yeah. Or we are the applications that we've released actually are a little closer to the metal than CUDA. So we're really writing right to the cards to get all the performance out of it. So we didn't have a layer of abstraction like CUDA or OpenCL or OpenGL or any of those. I mean OpenGL, yes, but we're writing really right to the cards. So that's why we're really sensitive to how the different cards operate. And so or we have been. And so we just had a lot of compatibility issues were harder. ATI, I think, is better for games, as I said. The way that the games manage texture maps and polygons and everything else, I think it's better. I think that for a lot of the heavier operations, and I'm not the only one, I think a lot of developers have stated that NVIDIA has been in the past anyway easier to develop for. But it's not that it's impossible, just that it's less convenient. And so I think that I was kind of not being able to swap it out, but really having it part of that system is it'll be something to see. The the connectivity looks good. The performance obviously looks great. Obviously, the form factor is not something I'm particularly excited about. But I think that I think it'll be fine. I'm curious as to Apple's core target market, because a lot of the higher end folks that would really want to spend a lot of money. I mean, because in the old Mac Pros, our average cost for a Mac Pro, the way we spec them, was anywhere from $9,000 to $11,000 a Mac. For the desktops. So we're really spending. We're putting a lot of. A lot of memory in and drives and a lot of extra pieces to make sure that the whole system was really as fast as we could make it. Because if we were going to spend, if we were really going to go down the path of a Mac Pro, we really needed it to do everything, because otherwise we just replace it with an iMac. And so I think that the problem is that folks that are in our, doing what we're doing would vastly prefer to rack mount their machines. And so, or at least most of the ones that I know. So, so I think that one of the frustrations looking at the new one when I saw it, I mean, literally like the first couple of seconds, I actually was watching, I don't know where I was, but I was watching the video, and I was just like, oh, it's round. I don't know what I'm going to, it's like, I don't know where to stack it, because we don't buy computers one at a time. We're buying, five or six of these, and being able, a lot of what we try to do is rack them. I mean, there's part of me that, is excited because we're just finally going to get an upgrade, and it's going to have Thunderbolt, and it's going to be very fast. And I think I understand from a heating perspective, and the way that they're managing, all of those things, why circular makes sense to them, wrapping everything around that can make a lot of sense from a size perspective. But from a use perspective, I think there's a lot of us that really want to see that kind of performance in a, in a pizza box. And I know that that's not creative, and it's not, all those other things that Apple does. But it leaves me, for a lot of the stuff that we literally have 30 or 40 Mac Minis that we have because they're rack mountable, and we can shove them into systems, and so I'm hoping I know this sounds kind of odd, but I'm hoping to see Revs now in the Mac Minis, which we'll probably end up buying more of than the Mac Pros. We'll probably buy, you know, a handful of Mac Pros for some of our editing systems. But I don't see those as the bread and butter of, especially if the Mac Mini was upgraded to something that was a bit beefier, if they even if it built it, you know, to you or whatever, we'd be much more likely to buy a lot of those because of their form factor than buying a round computer. So I know I seem like a curmudgeon, but we have to deal with a lot of these machines. And so I was, you know, the form factor, I don't know what, you know, I have a hard time getting my head around it. So
I think there's just a lot of questions about it. Why that particular Xeon? Why that form factor? Why is everything soldered in? No upgradability? Will Thunderbolt 2 be supported better than Thunderbolt has been? Because that's key. What about pros who've invested in PCIe cards? What, you know, are they just going to throw them all out? The form factor isn't rackable. It's beautiful. And then the final question is, how much is this damn thing going to cost? Because it looks expensive.
Well, yeah, and I think that the reality is, you know, pound for pound, literally, I think that it'll probably be the highest performance computer that you can buy, and it'll be very stable, and the graphics will be, it'll be a very, very solid machine. The question, I think, is, and for a small market that really needs, you know, that kind of performance and is ready for that, I think that that'll be, you know, it'll be a great machine for that. I think
if it works the way it is, out of the box, just right for you, then it's fine. But you can't upgrade it.
Well, yeah, you can upgrade. Yeah, you can't upgrade it in the way that we would normally. Obviously, using Thunderbolt, I think a lot of the idea is external capacity of using Thunderbolt to expand some of those things. And coming out of the box, it's going to be way ahead of a lot of other machines. I mean, and so I think that, and I think it will also, I think we'll most likely see Revs to, I mean, I'm just guessing all of this stuff, but I think we'll most likely see Revs when it's released to Final Cut and Motion and all those other things to take full advantage of it. And I think that it is, as a 4K editing machine, and I think that that might be a lot of what it's designed for. I think that it has some pretty intense advantages from a cost perspective and performance perspective over many of the options that you would see from, you know, Adobe and Avid. So I think that you're going to see, you know, Final Cut, you know, really coming into its own, you know, with a machine that's really designed to work with it. Because I'm going to guess that Final Cut is really going to be, I mean, this machine was designed for Final Cut, and Final Cut was designed for this machine. Because I think that that is probably their best market, you know, is going to be people who want to do the next generation of, you know, 4K, you know, production. I think that there's a lot of people who are going to want to edit that, and you know, they're going to find that the thing that runs the smoothest on it is Final Cut, because I'd be hard pressed to believe that they weren't obviously working pretty closely with the Final Cut team to do that. And I'm just
they implied that they said that, but yeah, I think they said that.
So I think this is really, I think that this machine is built for Final Cut users who want to go to 4K, you know, and they need a machine that's going to be able to suck that up and play it back well and everything else. And so I think that that's going to be great. I think that, again, you know, I think that it's going to probably do really well with 3D. You know, I think that there's enough there to be powerful, but I think that a lot of people are going to have to decide whether they're really going to use that up in a way that makes sense to get that as opposed to a really fast, you know, 27-inch iMac, you know, which is pretty impressive these days. So
guess, what is a guess as to price on this?
Where's
this?
I bet you it starts at $4,000. Yeah, I mean, that's my guess. $3,500. Maybe, I mean, it could, I mean, at the very lowest, maybe you could get it stripped down $2,500 to $3,000.
I feel like Apple will find some SKU that's $2,500. Not that anybody would buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they'll find a way to get a $2,500 SKU just so that they can say it's starting at $2,500. But the one you want is, I think you're right, $4,000.
Yeah, and people are asking about QMaster rendering, and I think that's a perfect example of what you want Mac Minis for. You know, so, you know, you want to be able to have racks and racks and racks of machines, and being able to rack the machines is, you know, pretty important to us. So,
well, you can get those new cylindrical racks. They're going to be beautiful. Yeah. To me, it feels like the Cube. It feels like something that was very design focused. Somebody in the chat room said, and I think he might be right, form over function. Wouldn't a lot of pros just been happier to keep the cheese grater because they don't care, it's under the desk, and make it new, make it fresh, make it all the new parts?
I
don't see why they didn't do that, frankly.
Yeah, so I'm a little, I'm not as excited as I thought I was hoping to be when I saw the new Mac Pro. You know, maybe I'll use it and I'll change my mind.
It'll be a great home theater PC. I cannot wait to have that in my living room.
Seriously, with 4K screens,
home theater PC.
So, I mean, Serenity, what do you think? We've been chewing this over for 3 weeks, and that's why, because Alex hasn't been here. I really wanted to get his opinion. I'm not leaving Renee and Andy out, and we'll give you a chance to talk. But we've been chewing this over. In fact, I got basted on Twit for saying I thought it was a cube, and disappointing. Serenity, what do you think? What do your readers think?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, Dan Frakes, my coworker, is probably the expert on the Mac Pro over at Macworld, and he's been writing things at length about. Yeah. Oh, he's great. He's great, and he loves the Mac Pro, and he's, I think, very similar to Alex in terms of like, he wants to go out and buy one, but at the same time, he doesn't really think that it's necessarily the machine that pros were asking for. But that's Apple, right? You know, Apple never makes machines. They're not going to say, oh, you want that kind of a machine? We're going to go ahead and make that for you. They're going to say, no, we know what's best for you. We know what kind of machine you should be using and you should be powering forward with. So we're going to make this and you're going to like it. At least, you know, for 6 months until we realize that we're not selling any.
That feels awfully arrogant. Yeah, it feels so arrogant in this day and age.
It is a little bit arrogant, but Apple at this point, I think, has earned enough credit. They've earned their cred to be a little bit arrogant and to say, yeah, we're going to try something new. I mean, everybody thought that the iPhone was going to fail when the iPhone came out, and look where that dropped. I mean,
yeah,
not
everybody but the Mac Break Weekly crew. down to Scott Bourne, who was like, I don't know what. He was like ready to leap over the table and grab one, a sight unseen.
Give me all of your things.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I used to be a film editor.
Use these things.
Yeah. Yeah, so I used it just for a few years because I got out of that industry pretty quickly. My Cheese Grater Mac Pro is my best friend. Yeah. And I always keep a button on the Mac Pro issue, even though I don't think I'm ever going to buy one again because my needs at this point are pretty well filled with an iMac and a Mac and like a MacBook Air. It's still a really, really interesting market to follow. And I have a lot of friends who are creative professionals, both in the film industry and in graphic design and comics. And I know, especially comics industry, there are some people who are looking at the Mac Pro and being like, that will run multiple monitors and my Photoshop install. Right. And, you know, it will make everything really nice. So I do see that the new Mac Pro may have a good market for it. It's just not necessarily the market that the Mac Pro is currently serving.
Andy?
I think that Serenity had the right point there. The design of this thing kind of screams out that they're not marketing this at people who companies that want to buy 100 of these and rack mount them. I think the shape says that they want to sell these to that colorist who is running Photoshop in multiple layers and multiple screens and wants the power so that they have immense responsiveness and control for the person who's like a one person editing suite, editing shop. It's for one person who buys this one thing to put on their one desk and have a beautiful thing to, you know, gather dust and wrap cables around as they get into week three of a 2.5 week project. So I do think this is a case of I'm not sure if it's of style over substance. I think it's more of style making the statement of who Apple is intending this for.
Well, and one thing that I want to say is that I don't necessarily even think the round shape was style over substance as much as it was. I mean, I think that there are some clear engineering reasons to wrap something around the heat core, you know, or the cooling core. So I think that part of why it gets so small with so much power is a functional issue and not just a form issue. So I understand that. As I said, for me, I think I'd probably end up buying a lot more Mac Mini Pros that were souped up than one of these. But I mean, I'll say everything I'm going to say. I'm still buying two or three of them.
I think you're unusual, but too, as always. you're an outlier, Alex.
But it does say that. I'm sorry. I just want to say that it does. That is a design that it is impossible really to do anything with it but put it on a desk. You can't put it on a floor. You can't put it in groups. I mean, unless you want to have your server room look like the alien egg environment from the first Alien movie.
Yes.
And who would not want that? I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's not as though they designed something that could be flexible. It really is put it on the desk and put it all by itself.
It's interesting because I think anyone who's observed Apple for a long time saw this coming because, you know, there was the iMovie reboot and there was the Final Cut Pro reboot and the Xserve was kicked out and laptops became, you know, completely sealed and the iMac became completely sealed. And this is the same sort of priorities put onto the Mac Pro. And Apple is clearly saying once again that if you wanted to put this as one of 3 million units in a crate, we don't necessarily want that business. You have a valid business, but you know there's other companies that will sell you those boxes, and that's not Apple. But if you are an independent, if you're a single person, if you're a creative type, this is a spectacular machine inside and outside, and we would love your business. And exactly what you know, Andy and Serenity said, this won't be the thing filling your server room, but it will be the thing that I think a lot of indie Mac developers are going to really let loose on and make some fantastic software for. And those things will trickle down to whatever the next generation iMac and Mac Mini and eventually laptops are.
Well, and I think that I think that the individual, I don't know that many individuals that need more than a 27-inch iMac. So I think that that's the thing, is that I think that's the issue is that the, I mean, I have a classroom in the other room here with 27-inch iMacs. And so, and we're doing 3D and editing and, you know, everything else. And so I think that that is a, it's a pretty beefy machine. And so I think that that's the hard part is that I don't, you know, usually you're starting to get into 3, 4, 5, and maybe that's enough to put a desktop. But I think a lot of us, you know, when you start getting efficient, once you get over, and I can see Apple really focusing on that handful of people. But once you, you know, reach, you know, get more than 5 or 10 of these, you really wish they were all, you know, kind of tied together into one place that you can manage.
Everyone's going to get into one Cinema Retina display, Alex. As soon as they see that, they'll just buy the computer to run it.
Right. Exactly.
There are now some Geekbench. You know how when new Macs come out, before they come out, people Geekbench them, and Geekbench saves everything. And they think that they know that these are the new Mac Pros. They're being identified as with an kind of an unusual number, the AAPL J90,1, which is not a standard Mac Pro reference. And it does show better Geekbench 2 scores, in some cases a lot, in some cases not a lot. And I guess it's going to depend a lot on what you do. You know, there's so many unknowns here.
Those are all Pixar IP addresses, Leo.
Yeah, you got to figure it's somebody like that, right? Maybe this is designed for Pixar. You could just see, you know, hundreds of these in Pixar, where design is so important.
When we saw Wall-E, was Eve robot was actually the first functional design prototype for this?
It doesn't fly, Andy.
Yeah. Sadly.
We don't know that yet. They didn't give us the full spec sheet.
That's true.
Put it upside down. Apple thermal could be a hovercraft.
Apple does not comment on the flight capabilities of unannounced products.
John Poole, who runs Geekbench at Primate Labs, said 10% faster than the current Mac Pro. You know, if it were really true that that's 10% faster, and we don't know, that's a pretty big disappointment. But again, everybody seems to be saying they're not focusing on CPU improvements, yeah. But as you said, GPU improvements, Alex.
Yeah,
and this is a pre-release machine.
It's 6 gigs. I believe it's 6 gigs of VRAM, which is mind-boggling.
Yeah. it's dual cards. I mean, that's
right. So if people take advantage of that, and again, I think that I really think this is focused on obviously there's other industries that can take advantage of this, but I think that this is really going to be focused on the Mac, the Final Cut Pro 4K editing solution. I think we're going to see a lot of marketing. Well, not really
I agree, but I don't
put
know
it
if
in your backpack.
I don't
on
know
your
if
way to Rwanda.
I don't know if design and size are critical factors for the Pro community, and that's really. Seems like a big focus of this. Let's get it an eighth the size. Let's get it looking gorgeous.
But that's
what you want to do is make it nice
but
and tiny.
Do they want to put it on their desk?
I could also see, you know, the independent filmmaker who is probably going to be traveling a lot or wants to make a film on location and edit on location. Let me tell you, trucking a Mac Pro down to Florida to make a feature film and edit it there, that wasn't fun. Trucking one of these Mac Pros is a lot easier. I mean, that's your cords and your cables and your hard drives and this little tiny thing you can stick, you know, in some foam in a backpack and then set it up pretty much wherever. I mean, that's really cool for independent filmmakers.
I bet that would fit in carry-on luggage, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. There was a discussion that you could fit this in your backpack or into carry-on luggage, which, you know, that's a big deal for a lot of us trying to move electronics because moving a... the current cheese grater is in its
difficult.
Case is 98 pounds. Yeah. Just in case you're wondering.
No, we do, and we've done that. I know you've done. I know that's why you buy so many Mac Minis. Actually, and we've schlepped Mac Pros down at CES and elsewhere. That's true. I mean, this is a gorgeous thing for that. But is this something that Apple? Do you think Apple like went out, surveyed the market, and said, "Okay, we've pinpointed it. We see the future being one man shops, one woman shops, and portability." We see OpenCL being strong, CUDA not so much, or we don't worry about that particular part of the market. It just leaves a gap because do all these pros want to go out and buy Windows machines or Linux machines, or do they want a Hackintosh? It seems like there's a gap in the market.
Well, I still think, it's never going to happen, but I still have this dream that Apple will just let OS X run on anything at some point when they don't feel like they need it anymore. You know, and then we can develop the hardware that we need.
You are exactly so full of it. That's never going to happen.
I just said it wasn't going to happen.
Such a dreamer.
Here's the thing: is that what I said it wasn't going to happen at the beginning of that.
It's like Edward Snowden getting to walk home. It's just not going to happen.
I know. No. I understand it. I think what I was kind of pointing to is just the frustration a lot of us have that are pros is that we want the flexibility of a PC or Linux platform, but we want the OS X operating system, you know, because we want to build out these machines to do something, you know, useful. And we're, you know, I think as on the pro level, a lot of us just get tired of dealing with the simplistic view of, or the simplified product market that doesn't really fit any of us particularly well.
Yeah. But I mean, if you get your fever dream wish, you end up with things like, oh, well, I'm going to build this machine, and then none of it is optimized for OS X. So, I mean,
no, I understand that, but I think that there's a lot of, I mean, really, you could say that there are a handful of these that will work with OS X, and you could build, you could do a lot of things that would let us have the kind of, you know, the number of, you know, you don't have to go crazy and have every different option, because I know that that is the problem with Windows. But I think that, you know, being able to put a little bit more RAM in, or being able to have more drive slots, or being able to put more PCI, you know, these are all things that a lot of us, you know, need. And you know, we prefer to use OS X, but we have, you know, some of us have Windows machines specifically just so that we can do those kind of things. So...
Colin Johnson is listening in the UK whilst rubbing down the lounge. It must be a Britishism. I don't know what that means.
I don't want to know what that means.
He's getting it ready for
sandpaper.
Painting. I hope it's sandpaper, and I hope it's the floor he's talking about.
Either that, or is he going for like a Steve Jobs like living room design aesthetic?
Just simple.
One stereo and nothing else.
This is Brian Curley. He's listening while driving down the I-5. He says, don't...
Not while driving down the I-5, while parked on the shoulder of the I-5, I think you were meant to say.
He does say, don't tweet and drive. Jason Thompson's listening in his office just like last year. Poor Jason. He hasn't been able to get out of his office for an entire year.
Trapped for an entire year.
And Kyle Duffield is watching Mac's Backbreak Weekly as he does every week on his iPad Mini. Nice to have you all watching our 4th of July episode of Mac Break Weekly with newbie Serenity Caldwell, the incomparable Serenity Caldwell. Are you a jammer? Oh, I guess you have to do it all, right?
You do have to do it all in modern roller derby, but I like to jam. Jamming is my favorite thing.
Why am I not surprised? What is the name?
You go fast.
It's fun. And you get to elbow people. What's the name of the team?
I play for two, actually. My home team is called the Cosmonauties and has a nice Russian logo. And I play for the B All-Star team, so we're second string.
Awesome.
And it's the Boston Bee Party.
Are you in Boston?
I am in Boston. Oh. I moved to Boston last year.
Well, that's great. And now, do you have a derby name? Because Serenity Caldwell is a pretty good name for a derby name.
It is. People were joking that if I ever went by my real name, it would still sound like a derby name because it's S. Caldwell, so it would be Scaldwell.
Scaldwell.
Yeah, but my real derby name is R2D2Nate, which is horribly geeky. But...
And this, my friends, is why roller derby is the greatest sport ever invented.
It is.
All right.
I'll go see about.
A boot. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Mac Break Weekly, Serenity and Andy Anaka, Renee Ritchie, Alex Lindsay. Enough with the Mac Pro talk. We got what we wanted, which was a very detailed thought analysis from Alex Lindsay. And you know that we will all be buying one.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, it's going to look great in my credenza in my living room next to my 4K display.
No, that's the worst part. It's like I could sit there and go, rah, 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 this is what I want, but I think Apple knows this. A lot of us are going to go, oh, I really wish it had this, this, and this, but I'm still going to get one.
Hey, I bought a cube and loved my cube. I bought it on the last day they made
cube.
It. Did you?
Cube was pretty. I have one too.
I had a cube. I had many of Apple's strange designed machines.
Yeah, my first book was written on a cube. And you too. And you. And you. Renee, did you have a cube? You're the only one left out now.
I missed the cube. I'm so sad now. I feel a man apart.
I have one because it. You know that something's not going well when you have one on loan for review, and then you get an email saying, you know, if you'd like to just keep that, we can sell it to you at a substantial discount.
Ah, those were the days.
And it was still a lovely thing. But Alex, I'm going to put an idea in your head that's going to be the cruelest thing ever, because as soon as you hear this, you're going to have to do it. Now, you're talking about you transport these in a backpack and use B, you need lots of them for power. You should commission someone to make you a backpack harness so you can carry two of them side by side and look like the Rocketeer.
Ooh!
Oh, man.
If that fan is powerful enough, you might actually fly.
I also know cosplayers who can sell you one of the helmets and it'll look perfect. And now... You're now on a track that ends with you actually doing this, Alex, because you're too sensible not to want to do this.
No, you know, the gear is turning now. I'm like, I think I can actually make that work.
And here from Cult of Mac is a Mac, the new Mac Pro server rack.
I saw that.
You could actually convert an old wine rack into that. And, of course, you see cooled air in at the top, hot air out at the bottom.
So I have to admit, this might change my whole view. I'm going to have to go out and get a wine rack when this comes in and just see if we can't make a... Put six of them in there.
Get one made for Magnums.
But isn't there going to be a problem with thrust that it'll start like skating around the room?
Put it on coasters and have it, whirling around.
You put it on a central pin. You put it on a central pin, and then it'll slowly go around and around and around. It'd be awesome.
Like working more cooling energy.
It could be the next jammer for the Boston Bee Party.
Yes.
Watch out. Here comes my rack. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more Apple spells out iTunes radio terms for record labels. Details are now emerging. They opened their online store in Russia. Oh man, it's a slow week. And Apple and a 137-acre, 20-megawatt solar array in Reno. But first, a word from our friends at Citrix, who make that great program GoToMeeting. It is simply the best way to meet with colleagues, clients, prospective clients anywhere in the world. Nowadays, everybody's spread all over the place. I mean, Rwanda, Boston, Montreal, Boston, Petaluma. This is how people meet nowadays, right? With GoToMeeting. Pardon me?
I was just going to say, I'm in Africa, and the way that I'm doing almost all of my meetings is with GoToMeeting because I can. The big thing is I can log in on my computer to whatever Wi-Fi access that I have, and be on my computer and meeting with them, and they're either calling in or using their computer, and it is really efficient from the voice protocol. Even though there's lots of other things, you can screen share and you can do HD camera, but the voice when you're all over the world, it's just one of the easiest ways to tie everybody together. I love it.
Paula Deed is in our chat room and says, I met my wife on GoToMeeting. I don't know if I believe that. It's either not Paula Deed. Anyway, GoToMeeting, it allows you to share your screens with others using Macs or PCs or iPhones, iPads, Android devices. You can even present from an iPad, which really kind of gives you some interesting options. A beautiful day, you go out to the pool, you're having a meeting, you got your iPad. It uses the camera so you can see each other. The HD faces means that crystal clear HD video means it's as good as meeting face-to-face. I have to say, I am a huge fan. I want you to try it free for 30 days. The key, I think, to being successful, for years I didn't want to believe this, and Lisa made me believe it, is you got to meet with your team regularly. You got to have regular meetings. I hate meetings, but if we can make them more effective, if we can have them work, you know what? It is the way to be effective. And GoToMeeting makes that possible. It's the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate online. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click that orange try a free button. Our offer code is MacBreak, 30 days free. Great support 24/7. Not that you'll need it. It's so easy to install and use. GoToMeeting.com. Meet anywhere, even on an iPad. We thank them for their support of our show. 137-acre, 20-megawatt solar array outside of Reno, Nevada, where there's a lot of sun. This is in partnership with Nevada Energy. I'm not sure what it's for, but that's pretty cool. I guess you want to build server farms in places where power is cheap, cooling is easy,
And, you know, the connectivity is good, which is why North Carolina was the last place that Apple built this. I'm having trouble pulling this up. I don't know. You know, I'm having a little trouble with my Wi-Fi. I'm wondering if this is the MacBook Air acting up again. Or is it us? It's us. Chad says it's us. There it is. Look at that. Solar, baby.
Power of the sun.
I don't want the job of dusting those panels. That wouldn't be a good
job. That's for robots.
I hope you know, there's a Roomba for solar panels that just goes around and dusts. That would be good.
Let Apple. Robots take off.
This is from iMore, Mr. Ritchie. Apple credited with two of the best designs of the last 100 years.
Oh, yeah. I just pointed at Time. Time magazine went and interviewed a bunch of different designers and got their opinions on what were 12 of them. I don't know what the exact criteria was. 12 most impressive, 12 of the most meaningful, 12 of the most influential designs. And there was a huge array of things. I mean, there was airplanes and Vespa motorcycles, and there were two Apple products, both the original Mac and the iPod made it into their list.
Mac and iPod, it seems, I mean, it seems like Apple should have more than two.
Out of 12,
and the Mac
though,
Pro I mean, would go, well, I guess out of 12, in the best 12 in the 100 years.
And is it just U.S. inventions or is it inventions worldwide? Because
well, did we invent it's the, hard I to, wasn't sure. The Vespa sounds international. The Airbus.
Vespa's Italian.
Airbus is an international company.
Airbus
French,
is well, it's European, yeah. It's a Air, European yeah.
But you know, two is pretty good for Apple, for a company that's been around a little over 30
years. I want more.
1/6 of the most influential products ever, Leo, and you want more.
I'm not happy.
All of the products. I am surprised that it was the iPod that got mentioned and not the iPhone. But I suppose the iPod form factor gave way for the iPhone.
Both Johnny Ive designs.
This is true.
And the Macintosh, not a Johnny Ive, but, you know, nobody, who gets credit for designing the beautiful first Macintosh?
Or the escalator, apparently.
I don't think that should be on the list. I don't think that should be on the list. That's not a good design. What the hell is that? An AK-47. That's a crappy design. The floppy disk?
No, no, no.
Get these things off of here.
See, that does show a wide spectrum because the AK-47, there's been a whole book written about it, that the reason why it's such a great design is that you just can't destroy one of these things. You can take it apart, yeah, bury them in the sand. You can manufacture them badly, get them wet. They will always just frickin' work.
They're cheap and easy. I don't know.
Say collision.
And
also,
not like the floppy disk.
The Aeron chair, really? B&O stereo, really? I guess B&O stereo I'll give.
Okay, no, I'm not with you with B&O.
The Model T. That's an unusually good-looking Model T. You couldn't get them in red, by the way. That's, you know, not an option.
That's the dragster version. That's the funny car version of the Model T.
And the jet engine.
Yeah, it's a very random list.
It's totally random.
I don't know. That's a very skeuomorphic design. There's so much. There's too much chrome on it.
For the jet. You're talking about the jet.
There's very little discoverability in that interface. I mean, I don't know where to push.
That
I don't
is
know
steampunk.
Where to
not digitally authentic.
Look how steampunk that is. Man.
Yeah, now, I think the key is not to push anywhere.
If you replace those things around the outside with Mac Pros, just think.
There's your server rack.
There's your server rack.
Yes.
With super good cooling. I think the original Mac. You know, we give Johnny Ive such credit, and he, of course, did that iPod that they showed, which was not the first iPod. That's a later iPod. Didn't he do that one?
I think he did all of it, didn't he?
I believe he designed the original iPad, or iPod.
iPod? Okay. Jeff Raskin designed the Macintosh. Somebody's saying an iPhone. I know Jeff Raskin came up. I don't think he designed it. He came up with the idea.
No.
Was fired
the Bondi
early
Blue
on.
One, didn't he?
Pardon me?
Johnny Ive did the Bondi Blue iMac, I think.
Yes. And that predated the iPod, so I think you're right, Serenity, that he must have had a hand in all the iPods. Yeah. But who did the original Mac? Let's find that out. I want to know. Wasn't Susan Kerr. She did the icons.
Wasn't Frog, was it?
Oh, it might have been Frog Design. You're right. Who
it wasn't Berkeley
designed
Breed, it was the Banana Junior?
The 128K. Yes, it was. It was Bill, what's his name? Yeah. Macintosh. I wonder if Google knows.
It is
Google
hard to appreciate how
to
radical
know.
That was.
Apple history.
The answer for those listening at home is
Potash. Potash.
The password is SCSI Black Terminator. SCSI Black Terminator.
The Mac team, this Jeff Fresken, Brian Howard, Mark LeBruns, Burrell Smith. Burrell was the hardware guy. Joanna Hoffman, Bud Tribble might have had something to do with it as well. I don't think anybody gets
Steve Jobs.
This website Steve says Jobs. Terry O'Ama and Jerry Manock.
Oh, okay. That would not have been Apple employees. I think you might be right. It might have been Frog Design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because those names do not ring a bell as somebody
Steve Jobs' name appears on the design patent along with Terry O'Ama and Jerry Manock. Granted, this is Google, so.
They're liars. It's closely guided by Steve Jobs. But who are Terry O'Ama and Jerry Matlock? Manock. Matlock? Oh. Even though Steve didn't draw any of the lines, his ideas and inspirations made the design what it is. To be honest, we didn't know what it meant for a computer to be friendly until Steve told us, said O'Ama.
Well, it has to speak.
Matt Manock designed the rear bucket. That's what they call the back of the case.
Yep.
O'Ama handled the front bezel. So you got your bucket and you got your bezel. So O'Ama did the bezel. Manock did the bucket there. They snapped this together. Steve Jobs went like this, and now it's a Macintosh.
No, you don't know the whole story. All they did was they went to Canal Street in New York, you know, where you can buy anything on Canal Street, especially in the early 80s. You know, they said, hey, that looks like we can make a computer out of it. And so they just bought like 7 of them. Worked out well. They went back to the same guy, said, can you get us about 40,000 of them? And they said, when do you want it? And a lot of them, you know, they look like they fell off of something. That's not your business. That's why you don't go to the canal.
Right.
You got a receipt for nothing.
Yeah. It's made in Geneva with a J. Gerald Clifford Manock was an American industrial designer, worked for Apple from 77 through 84. And did the housing designs not only for the Mac, but the Apple II, the Apple III, and earlier compact Macintosh computers.
Now, is that a signature shade of gray, shade of beige?
Beige.
We saw that on a lot of different Apple products. I don't know if that was a signature color or whether it was just the color.
Same page says that there was the specific color of the plastic was made to last even with prolonged exposure to sunlight.
Yeah,
so.
It's not aging well, I got to tell you. It looks crappy now. It's yellowed. So apparently, there was a influence from Frog Design in this, because the Apple Design Group was founded by a former Frog, Hartmut Eschlinger.
Yeah.
Anyway, the reason if this is germane is because if it's one of the 12 best designs of the century, then Manock and Owano.
Well, I think they're talking about design as well. I mean, from the other ones that they did, I don't think it's necessarily industrial. Design, but functional design.
Right.
That it actually did something.
You're
that
right.
Really
because the AK-47, you can't say is a beautiful thing, but it highly functional.
No.
It's bulldog pretty.
It's
bulldog
beautiful
pretty.
If someone's coming at you with another gun.
Yeah.
And you like the fact that it works.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, just to circle it around, it actually has the original Mac has the same sort of design idea as this new Mac Pro, in that you can stick your hand inside it and lift the top of it does act as a carrying handle. It's not portable, but it's easily transportable.
You know, actually, now that you say that, it is. You can make a good case that the new Mac Pro is in the tradition of the original Macintosh in a way that the cheese grater and other late designs are not. It is very. You make a good point, Andy. It is very much the descendant of the original 128K Mac.
And probably by the time they get finished pricing it, it will probably cost as much as the original Mac.
$2,500 at Macy's.
I think $1 less than $3,000 myself. But yeah,
you think $29.99? It's got to have a 2 at the beginning though, right?
Yeah, I think there's going to be that. Just like the Retina, the first Retina MacBook Pro was technically, if you want to get the cheap one, $2,300, but they really think that you're going to be coming out, leaving the store with a $3,000 model. So I think they want to psychologically say that we have it for a sticker of less than $3,000.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Well, it certainly can't be more than $3,000. But as I said, I think that will not be the unit anybody wants.
On the other hand, that did come with a screen in 1984.
True. Beautiful.
And no removable storage, so it really costs a lot more.
It had a parallel port, though, Andy. You can't knock it for that. How do you... Sarah Perez doing some calculations on how to get into the App Store top 50 on the iPhone. Actually, it's a mobile apps analytics firm, Distimo, that did the calculations. They say that you need 23,000 free downloads a day if you want to get in the top free charts. And if you want to get in the top paid or grossing charts, You don't have to be quite so big. 950 downloads a day. But you do need to get at the top 50 spot in the grossing. You need a daily revenue of $12,000. Is that a surprise? Does that sound about right?
Sounds about right. I want to get into the top 50. That's all I'm saying. Just
I wouldn't mind $12,000 a day. No,
when you say nobody's making any money making apps for the app store, I think then we just need to look at the top 50 and go, well, there's somebody making
money. Make money. Top 10, the top 10 in the grossing chart, $47,000 a day.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. In May, a free iPhone app needed to see more than 70,000 downloads a day to get the top 10 free. Yeah, somebody's making money, but that's, I guess, always been the point. A small select group are making.
Well, that's always the point with every industry. I mean, yeah. Hollywood is filled with a bunch of people waiting tables that want to be great actors that aren't making $20 million. Right. So I mean, I think that any industry, especially that is entrepreneurial, you're going to have a gold rush. You know, there's going to be a whole lot of people, and the real people are going to end up being the ones that sold the jeans.
It is the sixth birthday of the iPhone. When is it? When exactly did the iPhone hit the stores?
On the previous weekend.
Last weekend.
Yeah.
I remember that day well. Robert Scoble was in a shower. No, that's something else. That's my mind. Scott Bourne. Remember the picture of Scott Bourne? It was in the San Francisco Chronicle coming out with the first iPhone at the store on
I think he hired Greg Martin sitting. I think he was sitting out
in line for him.
Scott didn't sit in line. Scott had somebody sit in line, and then Greg got sunburned, and Scott got a picture in the cover of the. Anyway.
The truth comes out 6 years later, June 29th, 2007. This seems like it's been a very big 6 years, hasn't it? Lots changed. The iPhone clearly established the idea of a keyboardless. Stylus-less phone.
Even antenna-less compared to those trios back
then. Antenna-less. Look at the trio. Yeah. Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
It's interesting how it lingered, too. I mean, for a long time, several companies said, oh, no one's going to take a phone seriously that doesn't have a keyboard, a hardware keyboard. It's just not going to be used by professionals. Or, you know, I need a stylus because, you know, I have fingernails, or I need to put in Asian characters or all these things. And Apple, in very typical fashion, never said, OK, we'll give you a hardware keyboard or we'll give you a stylus. But they decided to give functionality that would enable the same, you know, sort of feature set. And now more and more companies have come along to sort of adopt that model.
But to be fair, remember that this was a super expensive phone sold only in limited parts of the world, only through, and in the United States, only through one carrier. So it's not as though there wasn't time for a transition, so that the people who are kind of change averse, who the BlackBerry, which was the demon for messaging, and people who had been at that point used two or three generations of these devices and now could really pump out texts and emails really, really quickly on it. You really do have to see that keyboard and use it. Not only that, but learn how to use it before you kind of overcome your idea that this virtual keyboard is really going to work very, very well. I mean, I'm not sure how well they would have done if all companies decided to jump on that at the same time. I'm not sure that the iPhone would have, if BlackBerry had decided that we're going to do a virtual keyboard and here are the reasons why we think that's a good idea, because we can make it even faster for you people who need to push out a lot of text at the same, very, very quickly. I'm not sure it would have been, it might have been a different story, because it wasn't, it really is the sort of thing where I'm having trouble articulating it. It just seems like there are devices where if you just make it available to absolutely everybody at the same time and give them exactly the same sort of motivation to buy this instead of anything else, meaning price and availability, that's a more difficult path for something that's brand new than we're going to make this so that anybody who is very, very well motivated to have one can have one. And we believe that you who have a BlackBerry that still has another year and 3 months on the contract, you will probably have a friend who has one. And then you can actually get one in your hands and try it out. And that will mitigate all of the problems that you were having in giving it a try to begin with. I mean, it really was. It's hard to even for, you know, so it was only 7 years ago, 6 years ago. But it's hard to appreciate exactly how different this thing was from just about everything else out there. I mean, I remember that it was like a whole year that I had to pretty much challenge people to typing races to say I'm going to use and I'm not kidding. Even iPhone users said, "Oh, I stopped using it because I hate the keyboard. I can't type fast enough." And I said, "You were trying to type like this. You need to type like this. There is software built into it that helps you figure out what you meant to do." And literally say, "I will do a race and let's point out a paragraph of text. We will type both at the same time, and I almost guarantee you, I will finish faster, at least so fast that you will wonder if you haven't missed out on something."
At any point, I couldn't even get one.
Say again, Serenity.
I said I worked at an Apple store for a year and a half, and there were many a typing race to show new customers. It was crazy. The Apple stores, I think, were a big proponent in getting these things into the hands of people. Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. Key. What was the year that you worked in the Apple store?
I worked in the Apple store, let's see, from 2008 to almost 2000, to the very end of 2009, beginning of 2010. And then I left to go join Macworld.
You've had quite the checkered conflict of interest. Career. You really do wear many hats.
Film editor,
Apple genius, roller derby jammer. My name is Brian Hogan. Ask me anything. 3 years ago, I leaked the iPhone 4. It's on Reddit. Brian Hogan, the guy who found the iPhone 4 in a bar and sold it to Gizmodo, did an AMA on Reddit. He says, "I was 21. I was at a bar pretty late at night with two friends. After the last call, both of my friends went to the bathroom. As they left, a random drunk guy came out, walked up to me, picked up the phone on the bar stool next to me and said, 'Don't forget your phone.' I told him it wasn't mine. I didn't know who it belonged to. Random drunk guy hands me the phone and tasks me with finding its owner." Find its owner. That random drunk guy was Steve Jobs. No, I'm sorry. "I asked around and can't figure out who it belongs to. After my friends returned, we left and walked home having the intentions of figuring out who the phone belonged to and giving it back. Next day, I woke up, forgot I had the phone, then went around trying to figure out who it belonged to. I checked Craigslist, started looking at the phone for clues. Screen looked like it had a higher resolution than any iPhone I'd seen. Then the case had plastic pieces and buttons in strange places. When I took the case off, I found an iPhone with a flat back, flat edges, and a forward-facing camera. There were two barcode stickers in the back and a series of X's instead of serial numbers. Dum, 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 dum. I was very curious and excited at this point, but I had no idea what I had. Long story short, my friend Sage and I decided the phone was an Apple product. We decided to test and see what kind of leverage something like that had. First, Sage contacted Apple to tell them, 'We think we might have it.' After they blew him off, 'Get out of here, kid,' he started contacting different tech blogs to see if they wanted to meet in person and look at the phone for money. The people at Gizmodo took us seriously. We met, and they thought it was real, too. After about a month after that first meeting, they posted the article leaking the phone. He says that Gizmodo promised him $5,000 for the story and another $3,000 after it was confirmed by Apple to be real. And they didn't pay him. He says he actually hired an expensive attorney and it ended up costing more than they even promised that he would get. Never got, I guess he got the first payment, didn't get the second payment. The attorney cost more than $5,000. He was out. He says, "I rarely talk about the topic with people, but my conscience is clear. I'm over the embarrassment. And life is too short for some of the guilt I was placing upon myself about it. So F it. AMA. Ask me anything." And, of course, the first thing they said, "How much money did you get?" it's kind of interesting, and I have no reason to believe it's not real. I don't think he was ever prosecuted.
That's interesting, though. If that was the story that he told in its entirety to Gizmodo, it's the new element that I wasn't familiar with before, that I didn't find it myself. A drunk guy found it and handed it to me and then disappeared without any ability for me to ever identify who that person was. That seems to be that seems to be another layer of weirdness. That would make that. I'm not suggesting anything happened or didn't happen. I'm saying that if I had been offered this, whatever problems and questions I had about the legality of accepting this or where the actual source of the phone was, a new story would now be in my head saying, no, he actually stole it, or he knows the person who stole it, and he feels such a problem about saying that I simply found it that I have to establish an extra layer that's saying that, oh, a drunk guy found it. I can't tell you where it was in the bar because I didn't actually find it. It was another guy who just basically gave it to me. It's like, so I'm not saying anything one way or another. I'm saying that that's a new detail that I hadn't heard before the AMA. And that would make me think if that had been me being offered this phone thinking, it's kind of important that we not get involved with this right now because it's just too weird a story now.
He does say if it happened again, he'd give it to the bartender.
Yeah.
Which is what we asked. Why didn't they just give it to the bartender?
Yeah,
I think it's not an uncredible story. Remember, it's closing time. Pretty much anybody in a bar at 2 a.m. is drunk.
Yeah.
You really want to add to the conspiracy? And that drunk guy worked for Apple PR. It was an intentional leak. Certainly got him a lot of press.
What I'm saying is that let's invent something here. I'm not speculating. Let's invent something here.
Yes, that's what I was doing too, by the way.
only this time we're announcing beforehand we're making something up instead of
good thinking. Yes.
I mean, if let's say that you were a competitor and you knew that you had your hands on a really, really bad Apple prototype and you wanted to get a bad review of a bad upcoming product into play, you would essentially spend about $8.30 on a plastic bottle of vodka, douse yourself thoroughly with it, stumble into this bar and say, hey, mister, I think you forgot your iPhone. Although it looks like a secret Apple prototype, I bet you're the person who works for Apple who might have lost it. Don't sell it to the press. Yeah,
it just seems odd. If we've all seen too many movies, that's the problem, right?
We've seen too many bad movies.
Too many scripts.
Too many scripts. It does seem like there. Yes.
Well, that is a teaser from an upcoming Cupertino fan fiction.
Cupertino Vice.
Dark Brickley held the phone case in his hand. There was something oddly familiar yet suspicious about it. I must contact Gizmodo straight away, he determined, hailing for a passing taxi cab.
50 Shades of iPhone 4, as read by Andy Anatko. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will talk about the MacBook Air Wi-Fi issue. And unfortunately, you know, we were talking about the old Apple store in San Francisco on Market Street. Apple wants to move it. San Francisco officials maybe not too thrilled. We'll talk about what's going on there. But first, a word from Shutterstock.com. Shutterstock is a great place to get great images, videos for your vectors, for your next project. There are over 25 million stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and videos at Shutterstock.com. The best search engine ever. Create a free account, and you can start going through images, saving them into your own light box so you can share them with yourself or others. They've got a gorgeous iPad app. Won a Webby Award. Global country too, so, company, too. So if you are in Germany or China or Italy or Brazil or Belgium or on and on and on, they've got a local office. They can help you. Multilingual customer support, dedicated corporate reps, full-time customer support throughout the week. It's Shutterstock. Try the search engine. What did you search for there, Chad? That's in furniture?
I searched for interiors.
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 See, again, it's a source of inspiration as much as it is for stock photos. Of course, all royalty-free. You can use the photos in a variety of ways. They have a spectrum tool that lets you drill down and say, I only want to look at red, green, blue. Free to browse, use for inspiration. And if you decide you want to buy, they have a lot of affordable packages. I particularly like the subscriptions. I get 25 images a day, which is more than enough for my modest needs at a very affordable price. So try it today. You don't need a credit card. Just start an account and start using the Shutterstock search tool. Save your favorite images to your Lightbox for later review or sharing with colleagues. Once you decide you want to buy some images or get a subscription, use our offer code MacBreak7. MacBreak 7 for the month of July. We just change that every month so we know what month it was. And you'll get 30% off. Wow. Any new account. So if you get a subscription, that's going to be a really good deal. That's why I did that one. MacBreak 7 at Shutterstock.com. Thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. So, Hey, Leo.
I'm afraid that I have to go out. I have to go out to dinner with my boss, Jerome, who I introduced here. So I'm afraid I'm going to have to drop off here from here in Rwanda.
Quite all right. It's great to have you on. Thank you so much. How long will you be down there?
Thanks for having me.
You travel.
I'm just here. I leave. I fly to Istanbul tomorrow, and then. But I'm only there for a couple hours, and I'm on my way home. So
is Istanbul on the way, or you just wanted to see the Red Mosque?
No, I'm just connecting through Istanbul. But the reason that I'm connecting through Istanbul is because the Star Alliance Lounge in Istanbul is the best in the world.
Oh, really?
So if you're going to pick, oh my gosh, it's just. It's incredible. I'll post pictures. I'll put pictures up on G+. It is the most amazing Star Alliance lounge. That's all I got to say. So, I mean, if you're choosing which way to go, if you have to choose through South Africa, and if you go through South Africa...
That's a very common route, right? Go through Johannesburg.
Yeah, and then you have to use South African Airways. And if anyone was following me on Twitter, you know how much I love them.
Okay.
So we'll leave that alone. And so I'd rather just take Turkish and go through Istanbul. So anyway,
Turkish Air?
Yeah, Turkish Airways.
Wow.
And so it connects through Istanbul. So it's a one hop from Rwanda. I mean, you stop in Entebbe, which is for like an hour to refuel or whatever, pick people up, and then you go to Istanbul, and then you fly straight into Chicago.
Holy cow!
From Istanbul, and then if I'm lucky, if we get a little early, I'm going to be flying over San Francisco during the 4th of July fireworks.
You'll see the beautiful colored clouds that we're famous for.
That's what that's what I'm rooting for. So we'll see how that goes. So anyway,
actually, it might be. It's supposed to be like 100 degrees and clear. I think we're going to have a clear 4th of July. So that's great. Well, safe travels.
Catch fire because we got a drought. So anyway, yeah.
You know, there are people who have leaked NSA secrets who do not travel as much into exotic locations as Alex Lindsay.
He's amazing. Oh, yes. I love the Star Alliance Lounge at the Constantinople Airport. It's just, Istanbul. It's just fat. I remember it back when it was Constantinople.
Ask for Darla. If she's working there, she'll give you 3 extra brown sugars for your Turkish coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, lots of fun.
Have fun. Anyway, we'll take care.
I'll see you guys.
All right. Have a good dinner. Alex Lindsay, pixelcore.com. If you want to find out how you too can have a crazy travel schedule, just follow him at Alex Lindsay.
You know, people say they love to work for us, and then they actually do, and then they can't remember what continent they woke up in, and then they quit.
I'm actually going to be at the is British Airways Star Alliance? I don't know. I'm going to be at the Istanbul Airport in October.
I'll look for Dharma. Not Star Alliance, but you can still use a Star Alliance if you've got enough
miles.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'll just say I know Alex.
Yeah, exactly.
Alex,
we're not letting you in. The last time he was here, he drank all the gin.
All right. We're going to give Serenity Alex his seat at the table and continue on, soldier on. I didn't ask you for a pick, Alex. Too late.
Oh, I have one.
You want to give us one real quick?
Yep. So this little guy, check this guy out.
It's called the Ultra Studio Mini Recorder.
So what this is this has got Thunderbolt on one side. There's Thunderbolt. And it's got SDI and HDMI on the other. This is the smallest, tiniest little way to hook your HDMI or SDI camera to your laptop. So, it takes power from the Thunderbolt. And so it's like $150. And I didn't believe it would really work, but it does. So I carry this around in my backpack. This is kind of my backup. So if you ever need to hook a camera, whether it's your little handy cam that has an HDMI output or it's your, a bigger SDI camera, this literally plugs into your laptop and boom, you've got it sorted.
And so, if you have if you have live HDMI out so that you can record on the laptop. Is that right?
Which almost every, almost every video camera that you can buy at Best Buy or whatever has live HDMI out.
Generally, less compressed. It's like 444.
It's uncompressed, typically. But the main thing is that if you want to take one of those cameras and cheaply and easily connect it to your computer so that you can do a live stream without just a webcam, if you want something a little bit more than a webcam and you want to have something you have a little bit more control over, or you have something else and you want to do a live stream to Ustream or YouTube or whatever it is, this little guy can connect that right up for you. And I bought it thinking, we'll see if it works. And it works great. So anyway, if you're looking for that kind of thing, this is it.
The Ultra Studio Mini. Don't get fooled. Don't get the Ultra Studio 4K. It's a little more expensive and a little bigger. Get the little one. The bitty one. From Black Magic Design, as usual. They do amazing stuff. I just want one of everything from Black Magic. Yeah. Thank you, Alex.
I have one of everything.
I know you do.
All right, see ya. All right, see you later.
You got to travel a lot, but on the bright side, you get one of everything from Black Magic. It's a good deal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, see ya.
See ya. So San Francisco, well, see, Alex was the only one who cared about this. All of you guys are off on the East Coast. But
I used to live in San Francisco.
You remember that beautiful flagship Apple store down on Market Street?
I do. I spent many time in it.
Me too. They want to move up closer to Union Square, which is really a better spot. It's kind of more central. Not far away, a couple of blocks away. The city planning department says there's too much glass. Well, in fact, they say
store?
Yeah, in an Apple store. They say there's too much glass on Post Street, too much metal on Stockton Street. This is, you know, this is why people just get so upset with San Francisco. The plaza that would accompany it needs a friendlier entrance. Planners also want the project to include a circular bronze fountain by Ruth Asawa. In their defense, it is already on the block, so they just want them to keep it. Despite all this, the city's top planner said Thursday he sees no reason Apple can't build a modern metal and glass box within the historic setting of Union Square. You just got to move that fountain. And not so much glass on Post Street, not so much metal on Stockton Street.
It can just add all of the colors of iOS 7, dye the glass and the metal. So it's a multicolored Apple store, which would actually fit very well for downtown San Francisco when you think about it.
See, you realize that they're kind of like tying their own nooses here, the planners, because the next time there's a big problem where they indicate that, oh, by the way, there was a major sewer line break due to lack of maintenance, or that there's a heavily underserved power grid in this section, everyone can say, yeah, I see, because they didn't actually deal with infrastructure because they're too busy complaining about the choice of materials.
Exactly.
That's the whole department. That was their entire budget. It's like, but can't you use like olive wood or perhaps something like a walnut texturized sort of process?
We need more shrubberies.
Apple clearly can't be trusted with materials at their own Apple stores.
Oh my God.
Of course not.
The same thing happened here in Petaluma. The city council told the people building our movie theater what color to paint it. And it's the most god-awful like green and purple. It's just crazy.
Green and purple?
Yeah.
Joker colors.
Yeah. I don't know anybody who wants green and purple put together.
I know. Come see it, Serenity. Ugly.
Hulk colors.
And it was specified by the city council.
Got a Hulk
it sounds
fetish.
Like hotel room carpet or like a casino carpet.
Yeah. Anyway.
Comic book villains.
There's too much clash on Post Street, and I don't like the metal on Stockton. And would you put a fountain in front of it for crying out loud?
It's all too matchy-matchy. Are they Project Runway judges who are approving the design architecture now?
Way too elegant. Stop it.
Get rid of that wickety-whack. You got
too much wickety-whack.
And also your atrium has crazy crotch going on.
Project Runway San Francisco. And this the company credited with 2 out of the best 12 designs of the last 100 years. All right. We talked last week about the MacBook Air Wi-Fi problems on the newest MacBook Air. I'm still not sure what's going on with mine because our Wi-Fi is a little wanky here. I've never had a problem with the Apple's own airport, the new one with the AC, so I can't tell. People have complained about it. Apple has said, remember last week we talked about capture. If somebody comes into the Apple store with Wi-Fi problems on the new MacBook Air, capture it. And apparently the capture plan has now gone to a capture and release program. They have invited people to join the Appleseed program. If you accept, we'll provide you with a pre-release version of a Wi-Fi update to install and use. So I guess they think they've figured out what's wrong with the Wi-Fi and the new MacBook Airs, and they're beta testing it. Anybody in our chat room?
Software, not hardware.
Yeah, let's cross your fingers, right? Because that's easy to fix. Anybody in the chat room received one of these invitations and has tried it? I should have complained. I didn't complain, so...
I have not, but my MacBook Air is very old, so yeah. I don't think it's going to be running into Wi-Fi
fine.
Problems.
You're fine.
It just, you know, goes blank every day, but that's another story.
That's another story entirely. They're not capturing those.
No.
Yeah.
They don't care.
They don't care. Sketchy photos. You know what? If it weren't a slow news day, I wouldn't be doing this. Sketchy photos claim to show backplate for rumored low-cost iPhone, iPad 5 schematics. You know how you know it's low-cost? It's lime freaking green.
It's like a leisure suit.
It looks like the cheap cases that you buy on eBay for iPhones.
Yep.
Well, that might not be the actual, if these were genuine, and I'm not suggesting they aren't, that might not be the actual color.
Right.
Sometimes when they're doing these sample runs, that's just whatever they happen to have.
Although, if you're going to do a low-cost phone designed for tasteless poor people, then
oh,
you...
dear.
I did love the article about...
Let's just go ahead and make sure we diagram that sentence. Poor people, comma, who happen to, if that subset of poor people.
Okay, it's a joke!
Venn diagram. In the set of poor people, the subset within that set who have no taste, much as in any set of average people.
You poor people have no taste at all. You want to put too much glass on Stockton Street.
I.e. wealthy people who wear
I would guess,
pants.
Though, that if Apple actually launched them, they would be in iOS 7 colors. But I did like the articles claiming that they were ripping off Nokia by using these sets of tasteless colors. I thought that was...
yeah.
Right.
Hey,
right.
That's Nokia's tasteless teal.
Yellow.
They want to hitch their wagon to the overwhelming success of Lumia Windows Phone.
Yes.
Rocket ship to the stars, baby.
Somebody explain to me why there's masking tape on the back of this iPad, new iPad.
to hold the antenna cover in place.
Great. That's encouraging.
Those are accurate as far as I know. From what I've seen, those are accurate.
This means that the new full-sized iPad, a 10-inch iPad, will have the same basic form factor as the Mini, yes. Which makes sense.
I would believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for the masking tape. That's not permanent.
That's extra $30 if you want the masking
tape. For me so much, though. It's like, oh, let's see the back plate of a
I know.
Rumor.
Like what I said, I wouldn't do this story. Yeah, if it weren't a slow week.
Well, it lets you feel bad about buying an iPad that doesn't have that design. So instead of feeling bad about when Apple actually launches it, you can feel bad about it 12 months earlier before they have any intention of launching it.
I can feel comfortable in my unsatisfaction and then still go out and buy something. Oh, yes. Consumerism. So
you can pre-write your unkind review that you're going to be putting on your Tumblr.
I've already written my review of all of the next 6 iPhones.
They're boring.
Boring!
How
they're
sad
a phone.
That the once great Apple computer,
still a phone,
having abdicated
boring.
Its design mandate and a more aggressive stance towards money. Very sad.
Can Apple read your iMessages? This is something we've gone back and forth about. Apple says they cannot. Matthew Green, who's a research professor at Johns Hopkins and a self-styled cryptographer, says part of it is that it's a black box. Apple has never said exactly what encryption they're using or how they're implementing it. So a lot of this is kind of reading, you know, looking at a black box and kind of reading into it. Apple says they can't read them in their post on the Apple site. There are certain categories of information which we do not provide to law enforcement or any other group because we choose not to retain it. For example, conversations which take place over iMessage and FaceTime are protected by end-to-end encryption, so no one but the sender and receiver can see or read them. Apple can't decrypt that data. He says he's skeptical. The biggest problem with Apple's position is it just isn't true. If you use the iCloud backup service to back up your device, there's a very good chance Apple can access the last few days of your iMessage history. This is kind of what we talked about last week. There are two possibilities. One, iMessage backups are encrypted under a key that never leaves the device. Or two, the backups are encrypted using your password as a key. He says, unfortunately, neither of these choices works, and it's easy to prove why, and there's a thought experiment on here. We don't need to go too deep into this. He says you don't really have to understand crypto to understand what's going on. If Apple has your I forgot security questions, and Apple certainly keeps the answers to those questions, they can decrypt it. If you didn't use iCloud backup, then perhaps not, but read the article, and I think
He says the upshot is the integrity of iMessage depends on Apple honestly handing out keys if they cease to be honest, or if somebody compromises the iMessage servers, or perhaps if they're compelled to by law enforcement, they can run a man in the middle and silently intercept iMessage data. So, you know, I don't think it's that important, except that you should not assume that iMessage is fully secure.
You can't verify, like, so it's difficult to trust.
Right.
Yeah. Any online conversation tool that you're going to be using, you have to have in the back of your head, someone could possibly read this. It's probably harder, given Apple's encryption methods, than it is for maybe, I don't know, AOL Instant Messenger, but there's still the possibility. And if you're backing up, if you're having highly sensitive conversations and then you're backing them up to iCloud, that seems like a bad idea. You can always turn that off.
Right. Yeah. But and then it's, you still don't know if it, there's some other way. I mean, it's just, I just feel like
you don't know if the person on the other end is forwarding them to someone else. I mean, there is no security.
That's a good point.
Once it leaves your phone,
that's a good point.
It's not Snapchat.
Even that.
This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
I love that idea.
I'm photographing the other phone. I'm photographing the other phone.
Oh boy.
By the way, didn't they in iOS 7? Didn't they turn off the feature that lets Snapchat let you know that somebody is screen capturing your picture?
So people who have broken the NDA have supposedly said it's in the release notes. That.
Yes.
Supposedly.
Well, yes. I don't know because I don't have an NDA, so I'm just I'm just saying what others have told me. But I think that'd be kind of cool. I just hate it when, you know, it says, oh, Leo's taking a screenshot of your Snapchat. Damn it.
Again, you can still take a photograph of the phone with the Snapchat on it. So, I mean, these things limit. They make it less easy to do. But
wish I'd thought of that.
It's true. And given that it's still beta software, that feature could be removed in future. Yeah.
That's the reason why I'm sure that everyone in this conversation has, when they're talking to companies or individuals, there's an email conversation that switches to, why don't we talk on the phone about this next part of it? Because that's kind of the only way to ensure that this, as soon as the conversation is over with, it kind of disappears. And the only thing that could possibly be left behind is I mean, it's more difficult. I mean, people can record them, but then they have to do something to describe them, as opposed to it's.
We're going
to
meet in a public place in Otco, out in the open, where everybody can see.
Now you're conversation just thinking like a spy. All over again.
I'm very disappointed, my friends, by the places you've choose to watch Mac Breakley Weekly. Even though it is a summertime, it is vacation week. This is Ryan Fairchild watching in his office. Hey, at least yup. His Twitter handle is Who Sleeps, is smoking some ribs while he watches MacBreak. No, can you see
Leo,
that?
No.
Can you show that?
I think that's...
You can't show
that's
that.
That's an indication that our show's mandate is effective. People are taking a break from work to enjoy some conversation about Mac and Apple.
And ribs.
And we're sticking it to the man, which is always lovely.
Hey, Chad, could you show that, please? Thank you. He was talking to somebody else. There's the ribs.
Oh, boy.
Now I'm hungry.
Bill Meeks is editing on a video on a PC while he's listening. Bill, that's not allowed. Lance is watching the show again from his messy office. Too many of you listen in a messy office. You got to stop that. I want you to get out, get some fresh air, put some headphones in. Stop. Okay, let's see. Johan, he's got a few screens. Okay, maybe I'd stay inside if I had that many. He says that's 11,520 by 1080.
When they get multi-monitor support, he's going to be happy.
Now, do those six monitors like fold up like an accordion?
I don't know what's going on.
Stick it in a backpack?
This is just wild.
Because if it does, that's awesome.
I feel like I'm looking at a setup for the Matrix.
Yeah.
It's more like a shrine to St. Alex. There should be like a couple candles in front of the middle monitor.
It is a lot of Alex Lindsay.
Just a tip, Johan. Extended desktop, not mirroring, might get you more real estate. I don't know why you'd want six of the same thing. Here's
the handsome face of Alex Lindsay.
Maybe he's just because it's, Maritza is watching with her her babies, she says, but they look like dogs to me. But
it's a little pug. A little pug dog.
Hope that keyboard's waterproof.
Yeah, strange that she puts that on the ground. Oh, there we go. Here's somebody who likes Serenity and has figured out the extended screen concept, has many things going on all at the same time. And look, it's a cheese grater over on the right-hand side there, a Mac Pro. That is, I think that's Terrell.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy putting your keyboard on top of your computer, Jarrell. You're not going to be able to do that with the next one because of those fascists at Apple.
Matt,
I don't want you to put your keyboard on top of things.
Circular keyboards might become a standard. I mean, ooh, they tried the hockey puck mouse. It could be next thing, like weird Dvorak. I don't know.
A spherical hover keyboard that sort of bobs on the air current.
Adam works
so much
at
with the flying.
Adam works at a computer repair shop. Look at his collection of broken computers.
Wow. Toys.
Spilling out from under the desk on the right there. Look at that.
They have a lot of problems with customers not coming to pick up their completed work. Okay.
Your CRT has been fixed and has been waiting for you for the last four years.
It turns out that the Commodore 64 just simply had a stuck key. You can't pick it up any time, sir. I don't know if the modem still works, but it was working when we fixed it in 1983.
What state do you think this guy, Andrew Rogers, lives in? He's in Katy, Texas, but he's got a coffee mug from Seattle, so I don't know. And his poster says, think libertarian. Socialism is forever. I'm very confused.
Vive le Québec libre.
Yeah, Québec libre. Here is somebody from Sweden. He's watching in Luleå, Sweden with his cube. Wait a minute. Is that a cube? It is. Look.
Aww.
Aww. And there's a Nokia phone. Candy bar phone on top of it.
He's susceptible to Zod invasion.
No, Leo, measure the lapels of you in that screen. Maybe that might be from like 1998.
That's an old one. Danny Mercer is avoiding the rain and watching inside. I'm not sure from where. He doesn't say. Tell us where you're from. And finally, this fella, Joe Cunha, watching Mac Break and saw this go by his window, the Budweiser Clydesdales. He's gone off to chase them down the street.
Buster.
We're going to take a break, come back with, should we talk about, is it a story, this whole thing about Apple? Wall Street Journal says Apple finds it difficult to divorce Samsung. Is Apple trying to dump Samsung? No.
I don't think so.
It's complicated, Leo.
It's complicated.
Supplier stories.
Thank you, Facebook, for giving us a phrase for that relationship.
Awkward 4th of July dinner. They don't want to do.
Block and unfollow.
Boy.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with our picks of the week in just a bit. Actually, this one's going to be you too, Andy, because it's Audible time. Audible.com, the greatest audiobook store in existence. Over 100,000 titles, all the best books read by great actors. If you read that New York Times article about how many actors are reading books now, and of course they mention Audible because Audible studios are near Broadway. They've got 9 studios. They're in there, and they're bringing in the best voices. You know what they're doing, which is great? They've got this Audible, one among other things, this Audible Frontiers program where they're taking classic sci-fi that's never been made into audiobooks, getting great actors to read them. And if you're a sci-fi fan, Audible is manna from heaven. But, you know, you don't have to. You know me. I love my Audible books. Right now I'm listening to Peter F. Hamilton's Great North Road, which is just fabulous, another classic sci-fi from one of the great sci-fi authors. What do you said you had something good you're listening to, Andy?
I've got something good on deck. This is good. I've selected this as good summer beach reading for nerds. Kevin Mitnick has written a couple of books, but he was one of the first, second or third, really highly publicized. The FBI shut him down and put him in jail, and then he went on to write books about his experience. The first one was sort of a business book almost, a technical book. The second one is the one I'm recommending. It's called Ghost in the Wires, My Adventures as the World's Most Wanted Hacker. And this is written more like a memoir written by somebody who did some naughty things years ago, and it's the events are still recent enough that he can still reconstruct exactly what he did and what he was thinking at the time. But it's long enough ago that he can be, oh, I remember that time that the FBI had to flee my apartment and assume a new identity because the FBI was on my tail for federal crimes. I mean, who doesn't have a story like that? You know, it would almost be weird if I didn't. This is a book that I was sent like for review, like when it first came out a couple of years ago. And I read the first couple chapters and liked it, but like paper books, it's like you don't wind up reading those things. And then so I got the audiobook. What I liked about the bits of it that I read in hardcover is that this is sort of like this exact analogy. You see these movies about like the elegant gentleman safecracker, like the elegant like cat burglar jewel thief. And so his story in this book is from a different time where it's like, I'm not going to steal people's credit card numbers. I don't want to pillage the castle. I just want to walk around and see what's inside there and satisfy my curiosity. This is the guy. I just simply want to steal this what has been stolen from somebody else and steal from the rich. And I want to be elegant. And so it's the difference between that kind of a criminal and the kind who wants to smash every window in the jewelry store, hold guns on the employees, maybe put a gun butt to the head of the guard. It's not so. That's why you can be entertained by this. This isn't about somebody who was stealing hundreds of thousands of credit cards and selling them to an organized crime. That would come other people much, much later. No. So you can actually read it like a nice, fun, like a light thriller with lots of details about it. Where it goes into detail is mostly about, as usual, the most powerful weapon, which is social engineering. Just get a phone number, call somebody, give them the right story, and get them to give you that information that is by voice, the information that is very, very tightly secured by microchip. So good stuff. It's also a 14-hour book, but it's more like I said, more like a beach book than a technical book by any means.
And we also interviewed him on Triangulation a little while back where Leo did it. And I've been listening to this one for a while. Absolutely, really good.
Well, meanwhile, I will double my recommendation for Neil Gaiman's last book, The Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Just finished
it like last week. I was saving it for a car trip, and it really was. It did cost me an extra like $4 in gas because I just wanted to keep driving and get to the end of this. And yeah, I mean, it's if you, I think that's, it's a great crossover book because there are people who really like what Gaiman does, and there's lots of that in there. And there are people who might have been put off by his previous books because they are of a certain genre, they are of a certain type. And this one is a lot more relatable and a lot more human because of the way it's narrated.
But another good book, I highly agree. Neil Gaiman is amazing. Have you started listening to that yet?
I finished Ocean at the End of the Lane. I read the first two or three chapters of Ghost in the Wires in hardcover.
Right.
And this is one of those things where I occasionally have to go through review copies of books and decide which I'm going to keep, which I'm going to donate, and which I would not inflict even on my local library. And was reminded of, oh, I like that. Why did I not read this? Oh, because it's a hardcover and you don't do this thing where you carry on hardcovers anymore. And so knowing that I still have a couple of Audible credits, I said, oh, great, we'll get that one.
I got two. I know what I'm doing. How about you? You got your Audible credit. You can get one for free if you go to audible.com/MacBreak. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's the book a month account. But your first 30 days are free. You can cancel any time in that first 30 days. Keep the book forever. Pay nothing. I don't think you're going to want to cancel. But we know that, you know, maybe some people are a little nervous about the idea of audiobooks. So try it. I think you'll like it. Either one of those would be an excellent first book. But there's 100,000 to choose from. audible.com/MacBreak. Yeah, we interviewed Kevin when that book came out, and I thought I had a copy, but I do not. Ah. Must have brought it home. Let us get our picks of the week. I'm going to start all the way over to my right, Mr. Rene Ritchie of iMore.com.
So Warner Brothers is having a sale for all of their iOS apps, not their Mac apps, sadly, but their iOS apps. And that includes a lot of the Lego games. You can get them for 99 cents now. And I am a huge fan of the Lego series, especially the older ones, especially Lego Batman. I used to play that with my godkids, four years old, 7 years old. We had a great time. We played it on the Xbox or on the PlayStation 3. Wow. I've played a little bit of it on the iPad with them as well. It's just, it's timeless. It's a fantastic way for people of many ages to play. Great game for families. You can have multiple players, especially on the consoles. On iOS, it's more of a personal experience, but just in the original games, they didn't have any voices, so they had to do everything just through the presentation, the animation, and the interaction. And it was just completely delightful, from the characters you could get to all the different situations they were in. And for anyone who's a longtime fan of DC Comics or Star Wars or Indiana Jones or Harry Potter or any of the games that they have the Lego equivalents for, it's a great way to relive those memories in a new way. And for people who just love those sort of family-friendly games that
give you a bit of a story, but more you could just play together and have fun together. They're wonderful for that too. And I, especially Lego Batman, the Lego Star Wars ones as well. I can't recommend them enough.
Now I'm confused because this is Batman, but it's everybody in the DC world all
the second one. So the original one is just Batman, and there's a part two now where they have his friends, Superman, Wonder Woman, the Flash, all join him for even more superhero frolics and fun.
Yeah, this looks is there comic book violence, or is it just?
Well, I mean, if you hit the Lego guy hard enough, he breaks down into little blocks and then has to reassemble himself.
It is the best demonstration of death free video game explosions, I can say. It's lovely.
Yeah,
I love it. All right, I'm down 99 cents. I'm downloading it. That's great. Is there an iPad or iPhone? All right.
Yeah, cool. And again, the console versions are better. The Mac version is better, but because you can play with the whole family, you got everyone sitting around the living room playing. But the iPad version is great, you know, just one-on-one.
Serenity, did we warn you that we would like a pick from you?
I got a last-minute warning from Chad that,
you would like to share?
I kind of figured it out. Yeah. Sure. Actually, I will share what I'm using to podcast, which is that I have all of these really lovely Audio Technica mics that I bought when I was doing radio plays a few years back. So I didn't want to buy like a Yeti or a different mic to podcast with, because I'm like, I spent so much money on these beautiful mics. Blue Microphones also sells this really cool thing called the Icicle, which hooks up via XLR. I'm picking it up now.
It hooks up via XLR.
Oh, it's really sturdy. It like it's plastic, but it feels completely sturdy, and I've tossed it around a bunch of times. It just hooks in via XLR to your mic, and then the other way via USB and connects and auto plug and play, no problem. Just a little switch for gain, but everything else is either controlled through your computer or through your original microphone. And I love it. I think I paid $69 for it. I think it's probably been discounted since then a little bit, but it's a awesome little gadget for hooking up mics you already own.
Converts pro mics into USB mics. So tell me about the radio plays. Did you stop doing that?
I still do them occasionally. The Incomparable just did a radio play a couple months back, which I directed and did a couple voices for. But that was my my college major was experimental theater, and including in that were radio plays and mask work and all kinds of fun stuff that you do when you're not doing traditional plays.
Mask work is really cool.
I love it.
Yeah. Something happens when you put that mask on. So, it's always been a dream of mine to do that here in the studio. Like Saturday nights have, the problem is getting great scripts.
Yeah. We actually have David Lohr, who's a playwright in the Midwest, and also a fan of The Incomparable, wrote us this amazing radio play script for The Incomparable for April Fool's, which we put together and performed. And it was too much fun. Thrilling Adventure Hour in Los Angeles also does radio plays right now. And they do ongoing scripts with B-list and C-list actors. You'll get Nathan Fillion coming in to do do spots. It's a great podcast. Yeah.
Your podcast, 5by5.tv/incomparable with Jason and Glenn Fleischman. Scott McNulty,
Dan Morin.
Yeah. It's a great, that's a good cast. A lot of fun.
We had a lot of fun. I hope we do more.
Yeah. The April Fool's edition.
I did a couple of roles on that show too. And it was even just like 4 hours of here is what the recording session was like. And perhaps edited down to 2.5. would be fun.
Andy, I forgot that I was directing you while barely having any voice. It was very.
Well, that's a compliment because that indicates what a chameleon I am when I adapt.
It's true. You just go into your role.
I really want to do that. To me, the only thing holding us back is the scripts. I just want to do good scripts. And the problem with the old-time radio theater, it's all exposition.
It is.
And I hate it.
Which can be fun if you have a good expository character or an expository actor.
Yeah. It's a little cornball.
Cornball can be fun.
It's a style. But I think that we could do real stuff. You know, you don't have to do cornball stuff. If we could only get some scripts.
There's only an army of people who could maybe have a scriptwriter among them.
We're listening. If you've got a script, what we thought we would be able to get is kind of unproduced scripts from screenwriters who were just, you know, wanted to workshop them or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, still working on it. We've got mics too. Andy Inako, your pick of the week.
This is a new comic book reader for iPad that I recently came across. It's called It's called Comic Rack. And when someone recommended it to me, I thought, why is it called Comic Crack? Like, no, Comic Pause Rack. And it is very much like in line with what iOS 7 is doing. There's my other favorite reader is kind of skeuomorphic, where it puts organizes everything into like virtual long boxes and virtual shelves. This one takes a more, well, let's just organize them the way that it, people might want to get at them. So it's a CBR, CBZ, PDF reader, and it automatically makes these like sort of automatic organization playlists, so to speak. So that right now it's showing me all the comics and all the titles that I have in here, but I can also just have it please show me just the ones that I've recently been reading, recently opened, and that will just simply take you right there. And then the reader itself is really, really nice. I'll just see. Well, that's where I hit. And so, because not only is it a good navigator, but the other readers don't do things like this, where if you want to just jet all the way to a specific page or to a specific section, it's easy to just teleport like straight to where you want to go. It keeps your place very nicely. It keeps your place very nicely. It's good for managing lots of different series and lots of different things that you're into at the same time. And it doesn't have that nice guided view that you get like in the Comixology reader. But look how nice that is. That when you're going from reading the book to basically back to navigating, it just gives you everything. It reminds you, here's the cover, the title that you're looking at, here are the pages that you're at. And if you go back to the library, I mean, it's very much like the Kindle app, with lots of style, lots of organization. I mean, even the color scheme is a little bit like the Kindle app. So if Amazon wants to improve their kind of duff comic book reader, because they do sell comics through the store, and simply buy out this company, I think they would be doing a very good favor for themselves. It's not cheap as iOS apps go, $7.99, which is not a ridiculous amount of money, but it's the sort of thing where it's you might be grateful that someone is showing it to you and there's videos of it online that you can take a look at. I do buy almost all my comics on Comixology these days, because all the ones I want are now available on Comixology. But sometimes for those really, really old, like Plastic Man Police comics and like comics from the 30s and 40s, and other stuff that's like hasn't been actually printed in the United States in 10 or 20 or 30 years, you do still like acquire a lot of CBRs and CBZs. And this is a really, really great app for reading that stuff.
Very good. Comic crack.
Yes. It's also multi-platform. So if you also have Android, if you also use Windows, you can also get readers for those.
Yeah, well. I saw that. That's awesome. A couple more from our viewers. This is Martin Wetterings in Breda, the Netherlands. And he's doing a reprise of one of our other pictures. And I like the wooden background. It's very skeuomorphic. And also the way he's aligned.
That's where it went.
Yeah, that's where it went. And he's aligned the monitors by height, which I think is a great, you know, very, very good thing to do. Here's somebody who's watching while working. We were talking about multi-monitors. A lot of people have multiple monitor displays. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who's tweeting from his BlackBerry 9930 while he's working on his PC, Mac, iPad mini. And a few other things in the background there. That was Greg Bilton. This is Lay Elliott from Backwoods, Mississippi. Lovely. Look at that.
Pastorel.
Yeah. That retina display looks almost as crisp as those trees. And here is Steven Sarkosh. He says, this is my setup and I'm not a bachelor. Image to the contrary. His wife probably just
locks
him.
He's got a cat.
Literally, yeah, he's got a cat. Quite a cat. Here's Nick watching in his home office. This is a tradition we do in the summertime during the 4th of July. Just like to see how you're watching. Here's from Brent, North Bay, Ontario. He's obviously a Zeppelin, a music fan. I don't even see any computers there at all.
He's watching us in analog disc medium.
Yeah, yeah. I love it. Hey, thank you all. It's really great to... Here's Ukrit is about to go sleep. The sleep is 3 a.m. He's watching in Thailand. The rest of the house is dark. Yes. And while he's going to bed in Australia, Quick's Quiz is just about to get up. He got a shot of me gone. All right, rub it in.
No, that's brilliant. That's the background plate you can use to like insert yourself into that scene as the host of Mac Break.
That's exactly right.
Ren didn't mention it, but she does all the ebooks for Macworld, and they're all awesome. So if you're looking for something to help you with any of your Apple products, they have a fantastic selection.
That's aww, good. Renee. Where do I find those, Serenity?
You can find them on macworld.com/superguides. Or by Googling, or on the iBook store or Kindle store or Google Play or pretty much your ebook reading platform of choice.
Wow.
She did the Herculean effort of putting them everywhere.
Look at these. Wow.
Yes. Those covers all designed by our lovely art director, Rob.
Serenity Caldwell, please come back. So great to have you.
So great to be here. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
What a background. Next time will you wear a mask? Oh, maybe you are.
And you never know. It's the beauty of Skype. Maybe I'll wear a hat next time.
Yeah. One of many, many hats. And it's so great to have you. Serenity Caldwell, Associate Editor at Macworld Magazine. And Ren, is that what people call you? Ren?
Serenity or Ren. I go like by Ren. Either.
Serenity's such a nice name, though. You want to
thank you.
Say it all. Thank you, Renee Ritchie, imore.com. We call him Ren. So it's Ren and Ren.
That's why we got put on this side of the room.
That's it. All that's the Wrens are on the right. Wrens. Thanks for joining me.
That makes me Stimpy.
Stimpy on the left. Mr. Andy Stimpy and Otko of the Chicago Sun-Times. Great to have you all. Of course, Alex Lindsay as well for PixelCore.com from Rwanda. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday morning. First show of the week for me, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. I hope you'll tune in live. We'd love having you live in studio. Live in the chat room, and you can also be in studio. We have a good group here this week. It's very nice from Australia and points north. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv, and we'll add you to the list, make sure there's a chair for you. But you know what? If you just show up, we actually can put a chair out at the last minute. We have the capability. Otherwise, get on-demand versions after the fact. Audio and video available at twit.tv/MBW and wherever podcasts are aggregated. Thanks for being here. Now get back to work. Because break time is over.